Hi, my name's Neil Jackson. I played Marcus van Skyver on the Blade TV series, and you're listening to the Dead TV podcast.
Welcome back to the Dead TV podcast with the final episode covering Dark Crystal. And you look at episodes 9 and 10 of this series, set before the events of the movie. We will have a special episode that goes that has a small review analyzing the movie and what happens in it following the TV show in a couple weeks after this. I am your host, Dr. Chris.
I'm Blunderland.
We will go through the plot synopsis of the episode and say our goodbyes to our mulch or our puppet Muppet cast, and then in a few weeks we will move on to Cowboy Bebop based on the anime, which should be a lot of fun and a little bit more uplifting and upbeat than Dark Crystal, which basically, in my opinion, is pretty depressing and sad.
I love it. It's not that bad.
It's not that bad. It's not that it's bad. It's just it's depressing. I mean, there's no happiness coming for, the little Gelflings.
I love it. I don't know. I think I just live in ER mode. It's a really good, I don't know. It's just me. I love it. But yes, let's get this party started. Do you want to start off?
Mirian takes her place as the leader of the Gelfling clans, and she feels unprepared for the responsibilities before her. When whispers of the Gelfling rebellion reach her, she must decide who she can trust and if she herself is truly worthy of that responsibility.
So,
Heavy is the head that wears the crown kind of feeling for this episode.
very much so. Because we start this episode with Deep waking up from, being unconscious from taking in so much of the, what do you call it, the awakening? Taking in so much of the purple power that the Dark Crystal is giving off and wreaking havoc across the lands. Her grandmother going, waving something around, and she's like, "Hey, I have the sword." And they're like, "Oh, why didn't you tell me?" And she's like, "You guys didn't ask." And that's when they discover that the second half of the sword is also with the tribe of the stone in the wood. So from there, Orgra offers herself up over to the Skeksis to kind of resurrect the hunter, because the hunter at this point is dead from getting into the altercation with his better half prior in the previous episode. And it's kind of like, oh no, it's kind of like the first real death of a Skeksis that we see, or wounding or a deep wounding of a Skeksis that we see. And from here, Mother Orger, like I said, offer herself up to the hunter. So they will let the Gelflings go, but the Skeksis, being very Skeksalicious, decide that they're going to agree with this, but they're also going to double cross Mother Orgra, and they're actually going to go after the Gelflings, because why would they give up something that they're offering for essence, right? Once Mother Orgra is drained, she kind of turns into dust, just like the Gelflings does, which leads me to believe everything in Thrall just turns into dust when they die.
There's one thing I want to understand is that one of the Skeksis is like super fat, and the rest are like disgustingly thin and skinny. Like, how did he get so big? Like, is he just like, eating more
Glutton.
than his fair share of Gelfling juice?
Or food in general. Skeksis are very gluttonous, gluttonous as far as food, power, position, possessions, the trying to gain higher authority within their own little cul-de-sac of oddities. So they're just very, very gluttonous creatures by nature. And we can see that in the way that they eat and clamor over every resource that they do have. So that's probably why it is fat. Either that, or remember when talking about them being gluttonous, that they hide a lot underneath their clothes. So it could be one of the many layers. They just have too much on top of them presenting as being fat. Because once you skin them down, you can definitely see chicken legs. So once, like I said, once Mother Orga is drained of her essence, she turns into dust, which kind of at this point makes us think that the hunter is also dead. Because
Yeah.
the point of draining Mother Orga was to use her essence to resurrect the hunter. And at this point, it didn't really do anything, kind of hindered their progress. And from there, Rianne gets the part of the sword from S stone and wood. Hold on, my notes are kind of everywhere. And he's trying to learn how to wield it, and they kind of have to.
Well, they thought that like killing Mother Agra was going to like save their hunter, and it just does the opposite effect. The thing is like she comes back later on, so
Yeah,
it's
that's in
I feel
episode
like
10 where she did, yeah.
the thing is like I believe I wanted to make an analogy of something. Do you think like Mother Agra is very much like Gandalf or Saruman in the way that they're not actual beings? And that is just how we perceive them, their physical form, because
No,
Gandalf.
I think it's because Mother Agra has such a close connection to Thra, which is the entity, and which is like the circle of life, how you rise and fall, you ha always return to Thra. And I think because she has the ability to connect with things so deeply, that this is her connection to them, which gives her the power to resurrect the way that she does later on in episode 10. But like I said, we find out that Rianne's dad in the Great War, that we only have they've only touched about briefly, was actually a wielder of the sword. And we find this out through Deet's grandmother as she explains the history of the sword. He has to, like I said, it's in the stone and wood, and they have to get the others to be free, the other Gelflings to be free. And like I said, they use Mother Orga's essence. And at this time, they tell the scientists, "Hey, you need to figure out how to resurrect other things, because we're going to need a significant army." And that doesn't really seem to be working out too well for the Skeksis. And the first person they start with is the hunter. And I was laughing because you have all these Skeksis around him, and you just see powder and makeup, and I'm just like, oh, the vanity of these ugly little things, trying to resurrect the dead. And I honestly thought he was going to come out looking like one of our forefathers, which how mu with how much powder they were putting on his yet to be reanimated corpse. So when I seen him strung up like a puppet, I was like, well, that's very fitting because Skeksis treat everybody like puppets.
Yeah, their vanity makes no sense when they're just like the most hideous things. But maybe this is like that Twilight Zone episode where all of the hideous things are beautiful and the beautiful woman is hideous.
Yeah, that's ex I think that presumption is definitely accurate in this instance, because I don't know how else to describe him. Like I said, I am partial to the Chamberlain. He is, I know, like they're evil creatures, but he is my favorite Skeksis. Now, when the two pieces of the blade are united, they find the other blade in like this silver receptacle full of blades. But when they're reunited, it ignites a blue flame within that piece. And it ignites the flames across all of the Gelfling clans, and allows communication, call for war. And the Skeksis, of course, intercept that, because Skeksis do what Skeksis do, and if it's not going to go their way, it's going to go no way. They threaten war, and that when they do threaten war, they realize that Rian has the heretic blade. And at this point, we kind of see a small crack in their shields and see fear. Not necessarily for the first time, but like true fear coming from this Skeksis, because now they're like, oh God, because they have gone to war with this blade a time before. And that would, and that we kind of, and then it goes into episode 10. Do you want to give that brief description?
Overall, what has been your general feelings and thoughts about the show? Has it changed over analyzing it, or do you still tout it as being this incredible piece of fantasy fiction?
I still like it as a piece of fantasy fiction, but that's because I have been watching the movie Dark Crystal for so many years. So to see the build up from, this lot, no, I don't want to say animated, but like this puppet performance to the movie, it makes sense. And as I stated, they do have other resources, which I have yet to get into. I really do need to, in
Like the
regards
Power of
to
the Dark
its.
Crystal, which is a comic book series.
Yeah, I really need to expand into it because I would really love to see what parts I'm actually, missing from the bigger picture. But that's just my point of view on that one.
Give me one
But
second.
I
Hold on, I'm
still.
being called. Hold on one second, I'm being called.
I've
Okay,
done it.
so episode 10 is called A Single Piece Was Lost, as the Gelflings. As the Gelfling and the Skeksis prepare for the fateful battle, the scientist starts work on a new secret weapon. Deet makes smoke bombs while Rian reads through Bray's journal and discovers a prophecy that he and Deet would be together. The darkening infecting the Deet's hands from when she was cured of the Nerlock, Deet becomes pained when Rian tries to hold her hand and comfort her and quickly withdraws. The battle for the Dark Crystal, obviously. We know how this goes, right from the beginning. It's the telling of like what I've been saying from the beginning of this show of just like nothing good comes to the end of the show for anybody really.
No, it's kind of left and
Even if
it's
the
kind of towards.
Skeksis are defeated at the end of the episode, it's still not great for the Gelflings because they're pretty much wiped out by the time we get to the film.
So, it, actually, your synopsis pretty much is how the beginning of that episode starts. So we start to see that Rian is actually falling in love with Deet, but she sees that she's been affected by the quickening, and she pulls away, and she's making her little smoke bombs, which is really cute. And then from there, we get to see that the Emperor kind of not necessarily admit that he has a weakness, but admit that he's feeling, which apparently isn't something that Skeksis typically do. Feelings are just no way, Jose, bad, just gross. But he takes the quickening upon himself because he's like, I'm just going to use the power. Like, why the heck not, you know? So he draws power from the quickening, and then it goes to our the Gelflings and the Skeksis then preparing for war, because that's kind of the inevitability of this story, right? And the scientist is trying to revive one of the arachnid. Because he was told by the emperor and everybody else, hey, use the flesh, you need to resurrect, we need an army. And it's not really going the way it wants to. There's two little, they look like podlings, they look like the same species as podlings, but their mouths are sewn shut. The chamberlain kind of just leaves them there to assist the scientists, and they end up finding a blade and cutting the stitches in their mouth because they want to be set free, because that's what the chamberlain has promised them. But that doesn't necessarily happen, and we find that the chamberlain, I'm just skipping around, this is like a whole thing about them. The chamberlain.
It's funny you mentioned the quickening. Do you know what other science fiction property uses the quickening as a word as part of their lore quite often?
No.
Highlander.
Oh, wow. It's been so long since I've seen that. So
Yeah,
long.
Highlander The quickening is the thing that happens to the Highlanders when they cut someone's head off.
Oh wow, I didn't even realize that. That is crazy. Yeah, so the my brain just turned off on you. These poor little Gelflings whose mouths are sewn shut and treated like absolute trash are now like, listen, we're not gonna stick around and deal with your BS. Like, we want to be free. So they undo their mouths, and the scientist ends up throwing them, one of them, in the pit, and then kind of bludgeoning the other one to death. So that's kind of how their fate ends up. This all stemmed from trying to revive the arachnid and it not going well, and he just is horrible. So at this point, we also realize that the hunter is alive. He kind of breaks himself free from his little puppet. Hilarious. His little puppet rack, as the Chamberlain is sitting on the throne pretending to be the Emperor, because they crave and want power so much. Breaks free, and then his other half is kind of like, hey, this is what's going on. I'm not gonna allow this. So he, in order to stop him, he inevitably ends up throwing himself off a cliff, which happens later on in the episode. Rian and the hunter are the ones to face off when they actually do clash with the Gelfling, because the Skeksis and Gelflings are already there fighting against each other, but that's who Rian ends up going against. And after the hunter is killed because his other half throws himself off the cliff, Rian then goes up against the because they're at a standstill talking and there's dialogue going back and forth. Rian ends up going against the general. And he ends up stabbing him with the heretic blade. And when he does so, you kind of see like this gray mystic swirl wrap around the blade, which to me kind of looked like how the crystal reacts when you're siphoning off a Gelfling's essence. So I thought that was very, very interesting. Now, whether or not that's where they're going with it, we will have to see later. During this confrontation, the stone and wood, the Almadra dies during the attack, and she dies also at the hands of the Chamberlain, which the Chamberlain then turns around and goes and finds the general and kills the general, and he kills the general out of spite and anger because the general had the general took his position from him earlier in the very, very beginning of of our season, took his position, and Skeksis just hold grudges to the end of time and wasn't gonna let that go. So he ends up killing the general and the general's counterpart. Because remember, if one dies, the other dies. But the Almadra of Stone and Wood did die. Once the hunter dies, Mother Augur comes back, and apparently that was her plan the whole time. Because remember, the Skeksis and what was the name of the other breed? Do you remember?
You mean what they become?
Yeah, n yeah, like I can't remember the exact name of the other half, but when they reunite, they are one. So the Almadra sacrificed herself in hopes that when they both died, it would resurrect her, because her kind of essence was kind of split, apparently, between the two, which is what ends up happening. There was a line in the show that had me giggling. Towards the end, Mother Augur, because she was reborn, she's like, I understand. I've been reborn. I'm a baby, but I'm still an old lady, which made me laugh. I thought that was really cute. And then, D and then you know, the Emperor, because he did absorb the quickening before, kind of hit tries to hit the Gelflings with this big purple powerful blast, and D kind of absorbs it and sends it back and turns one of the Skeksis into abysmal goo, and she explodes everywhere. And upon doing so, it makes the quickening or the darkening go faster through her body. You see the effects of her body, and then Rian goes and catches up to her while all the other Gelflings are celebrating, because they just pushed back and defeated the Skeksis to a point, And you just see her utterly and completely drained and not there. And that's kind of how it ends. Oh, and they found the last shard of the crystal, the missing piece of the crystal. It was in the heretic blade the entire time. But
Unfortunately, it
that's
doesn't
kind of.
really make the crystal less dark or purify it, but yeah, it
No,
kind of
but the.
ends on a way that in one of my notes I have the it's called, well, the piece of the crystal is called the Shard Division. Among the remains of the dual glaive, while Rian went after Deet, but Deet walled him away using the darkening and vanished into the endless forest. Meanwhile, Skektek manages to successfully use the dark crystal to diffuse Grunek sinews with Aramith tissue to create a mindless and soulless soldier automaton, the the Garthium, just as the defeated Skeksis return to their castle.
Yep, so the crystal is that huge the crystal that was in the heretic blade is that huge chunk that's missing from the dark crystal. You don't really find out what it's used for until the movie when it's reunited, and that's when it kind of purifies the crystal itself.
The Garthim, if that's how it's pronounced, which I don't 100% know, they are like kind of terrifying. And I remember seeing these as kids. They're like crab-like pincers with the hardback shells, very similar to what's that kind of animal you see at the sea, at the beach, washed up on shore? It's got a hardback shell with a stinger tail.
Horseshoe crab?
Yeah, something like that.
I'm like, I don't know which one. Horseshoe crab. We're gonna go with that.
Sure,
Is it
that's
the?
what we'll go
It's
with.
not a stingray. It's a horseshoe crab. Like
No,
it looks
it's
like a.
definitely not a stingray. It's definitely not a stingray. I think it's a horseshoe crab.
Yeah, it has to be. It's like
It's
gray
that
in
kind of
color.
like crazy, creepy looking thing.
Gray in color. Look like has to. Yeah, it has to be. It has to be a horseshoe crab.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Well, that is all of our notes for the Dark Crystal television show, as we are at the end of it and did not get renewed. Reasons why it didn't get renewed was pandemic and budget, really. It had extremely good viewership and it had good critical praise, but I guess the viewership wasn't good enough. And we'll be covering another show that Netflix canceled coming up with Cowboy Bebop that was canceled prior to even airing, which is kind of sad to think about. We definitely tried to have some people on the show from the Dark Crystal TV show, but unfortunately we weren't able to do it. But we'll see what happens in the future. I've had post interviews happen from shows that I did with actors that I have no longer covered, which has been kind of nice. If you go over to the Dead TV podcast, you can see my interview with Nelson Lee, who played Shin, Blade's guy in the chair, on the TV series Blade, the Marvel comic show from Spike TV in 2006. I covered just prior to this one. And he was kind enough to come on the show and talk a little bit about his career, as well as being a big lover of video games, anime, and Voltron. He has quite the Voltron and Gundam collection. It was pretty nice to see in his background. If you look at the guy, he says that he's 50 years old. You would never believe it. Where can people find you on the internet?
They can find me on Instagram as Blunderland, Blunderland.
And you can find me here on the Radio Horror Podcast Network on Radio Horror from 10 p.m. to 12. Check out my graphic novel, Vlada, A Dracula Tale, as well as the other parts, which my co-host is part of one of them, Vlada, Tales of the Damned. And we'll be back in a couple weeks as we have a review of the Dark Crystal movie before we move on to Cowboy Bebop. Thank you, everyone.